League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio. And let me tell you, I am really glad to be joined in the studio by Matt Ketchell, a.k.a. Ketch from BBC Match of the Day magazine, and Greg Tomlinson from the Newcastle United Supporters Trust Board. What a show. It is the first Newcastle show, not only of the year, but of the decade. And when it is that big, you have to get the big boys in. The dream team are in the house. The dangerous duo are here. We're going to be talking a whole host of things, looking at how the Geordie's done over that busy festive period because the injuries are racking up, looking at the FA Cup, and obviously, well, it didn't go too well against Rochdale, but they get another chance in a few days' time. And then it is the first show, like I've alluded to, so we have to get the big guns out. Lee Clark is joining us. James Fielden will be joining us, a commentator and Wolves fan, to preview that game. And then Mark Douglas, football publishing editor for the Chronicle Live, is on the show as well. What a packed show we have for you. But firstly, boys, happy new year. How are you both?
Yeah, marvellous. Living the dream.
Living the dream. Well, the dream is here because you're both with me now. We have to start then, obviously, look at those games that took place over that busy Christmas period for Newcastle. Let's start with the good, because we beat Palace 1-0, Almiron scored. Why don't we forget what happened after that?
Probably a good idea, isn't it?
Yeah, well, because of the league table as well. Yeah, so yeah, it started all right. I was back home for Christmas. Went to the Palace game and the Everton game. I actually thought we might go on a bad run over Christmas, and I thought it might start at the Palace game, but we got a win, which was a real surprise. We didn't play well at all, and I think maybe Almiron scoring that could be the highlight of the season. It was a fantastic moment. He deserved that. He's grafted all season. He hasn't let his head drop. He's kept going, and he put himself in a position to win us the game, and he did that. Great celebration down at the Gallagher end with a ball boy. It was just great scenes, and it was another 3 points, and you trot out the game and you look at each other going, I can't believe we've won again. And we were up to the lofty heights of, I think, ninth we hit, nosebleed level, and then the wheels fell off on Boxing Day, which is a real shame because we actually took the lead, obviously, at Old Trafford, and then we actually assisted them, I think, 3 goals, and really, Man United are playing really badly at the minute. I think they were there for the taking, and it was a missed opportunity. And then you play Everton at a bad time, you play an in-form Leicester team, and all of a sudden all your momentum's gone, and we're staring at the bottom end of the table again.
Yeah, all the momentum's slightly gone, obviously, Greg, over those last few games. But do you look at it then, recency bias, you look at those last three games, or do you look at that bigger picture? Because overall, maybe still not just those three games, better than what many or most expected this season.
Yeah, well, I think after the Palace game, I think we're level on points with Spurs. Obviously, they've not been having a great season. So, yeah, points-wise, we're definitely doing better. But, you know, I said last time I was on, you know, we're not playing good football and, you know, the luck will run out, in my opinion. And I think a few people thought I was being a bit negative. But it's kind of come home to roost. And the worst thing about all three of those defeats is that we've basically gifted the goals away. Almost all of them are from mistakes, silly, basic mistakes from our defenders rather than from great play by the opposition. And that's really, really sickening, really, when you're just gifting it away like that. Yeah,
well, mistakes obviously happen to any team, but as a sort of a theme of the show, Ketch, for us, we've sort of always said how strong the defence has been this year. You know, it's been a foundation for the side, a springboard, obviously, to a few results they had, that clean sheet against Palace. The mistakes, though, it does happen, but it's came in bunches, hasn't it, now?
It's happening a lot, and it's big players who are letting us down. Dubravka's probably been our player of the season, and I think he was at fault for the goal at Man United, where we took the lead. And if you can get through to half time and make yourself difficult to score against, you can really frustrate Man United on Boxing Day and maybe get something. And out of nowhere, he's gifted them. He's let a shot in that normally he saves, and that's disappointing. Lejeune, who I think is our best defender, unfortunately, I think he's been run into the ground by Bruce, and he's come back from his second serious knee injury, and he's been asked to play a lot of games, and it caught up with him, certainly against Everton and definitely against Leicester. So we put ourselves in bad positions by not rotating, not having a big enough squad, and you make mistakes at the Premier League level, you know what's going to happen. So that's where it's at.
Centre-backs are a funny one, because we have a lot of good centre-backs actually as well. We have the most depth, but we're still seeing obviously those injuries there, and yeah, no doubt Lejeune tired, and when you're tired you make mistakes. To come back from a long-term injury and play three games in a few days,
but mentally as well, that injury, I've done an ACL twice as well, to mentally overcome that injury and physically overcome that injury and play in the Premier League and play games thick and fast, it was poor management really. And I think we've got probably six centre-halves who are capable of playing, and that's really been tested over Christmas. At centre-half is our strongest position, and that's where we've been found out, really.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Obviously, Steve Bruce moaning about the injuries, and obviously the game build-up. Greg's frowning already as we get onto that. I want to know why, but obviously he has been boosted by the return to training of six players after the club's injury problems over that festive period, because four players went off in the 3-0 defeat to Leicester. Newcastle having to play 39 minutes with 10 men. Obviously, a few of those players are starting to come back now. A few of the players obviously still on the sidelines. Let's go on to Rochdale then, because you're going to have to play another game now against Rochdale. But in the first half, I don't want to say battered them, but you know, Newcastle should have won the game. The game should have been over. They should have killed the game off. Couldn't get that second goal, but Yellin and Atsu absolutely destroying them down that flanks. Did you have this sense that if we don't kill this off, this is going to be typical Newcastle? I think it's last time you got to the fifth round was 2006, Glen Rhoda days, if I'm not mistaken. Was there always in the back of the mind catch that, oh, here we go?
Yeah, absolutely. Most games. But there was a big sliding doors moment in that,
okay,
in that
right.
game for Newcastle as a club and for Joe Linton right. as a human. So
as a human.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big moment for him. We went 1-0 up, Almiron. I mean, we should be pinning Rochdale back, dominating
well,
possession.
You was though, wasn't you, in the first half?
It was really, it looked really good, solid, and you score, and that settles the nerves. And then you really do have to get another goal. You need another goal just to really put them out of sight. And Joe Linton's had a chance; he's fashioned it quite well. And then when he's come to apply the finish, he just hasn't caught it cleanly, and it's gone wide. I think if that goes in, we sail through. Happy days into the hat to play in the fifth round, definitely. And I think Joe Linton's confidence is boosted, along with Almiron's confidence, who's also had a confidence boost. I think that was a real sliding doors moment. He's missed that, and then I don't know what's happened at half time, but they've come out and they were excellent. I know they tweaked the system, and we just couldn't live with it. And they should have won that game. They had many chances. They should have put us away. They didn't. We were lucky, and we need to make sure we get the job done in the replay.
Yeah, they had many chances. Greg, what did go wrong? Because obviously undone by a 40-year-old at the end of the game, they had a chance to win it. But what did happen at halftime?
Well, I think it happened before halftime. The main change, actually, their manager took the right back.
Oh, it was the right back. It was left back.
After 35 minutes, because Atsu was going past him at absolute will, wasn't he? And I think after that he struggled a little bit, but we just lost all of that flow, all of that momentum. A couple more injuries, Almiron, and actually Muto was actually, I thought, doing all right. Mm-hmm. He was really lively, and obviously Joe Linton up front really struggling. It just all fluency, all momentum, just there was just nothing. And you know, they went back to their, you know, more old-fashioned tactics with the big man up front, and we just couldn't handle it. And yeah, they had the chances to win it.
Yeah, they did have their chances to win it. It was a strange one, Ketch, because I know you're saying that happens every game, Newcastle. You know, you always feel like they're going to come back into it. But I just felt like you're saying a sliding doors moment. Also, it was a big time for Newcastle not to create a statement or, you know, a statement of intent. But, you know, they're doing okay in the league this year. Forget those last few games and then get to the fourth round. You know, a good performance, albeit a team in the lower leagues. And it just never really materialised.
No, I think there's two positives at the club at the minute. One is Almiron's confidence is coming, and he's still
working
hard.
You can see that with a finish, couldn't you?
And he's got two goals now, and I don't think he's going to be a prolific goal scorer, but I just think now he's more comfortable in his surroundings, and I think he's building his confidence. And the second thing is, that was our strongest team. Bruce put the strongest team out. I was expecting to see, you know, Carl Darlow in goal and a few of the academy graduates who were on the bench out of necessity. I was expecting to see them start. They didn't. We really put our strongest team out to go through or stay in the cup, and we did that. And he has to follow that up now in the replay, because there's a huge carrot now to get through to the sixth round. If we can beat Oxford at home, we will be in the dizzy heights of the sixth round. I mean,
fifth round.
Then if we beat Oxford, you know, get the open top bus ready, because we'll be in the sixth round for the first time since 2005.
Fifth round. You keep.
Sorry.
He's already won it. Ketch. He's organised the parade.
It's been that long.
For bless him. He's desperate to get. To be fair, so am I, because they do have an illustrious history. You know, winning the cup six times. It just hasn't happened in the last 14 years or so.
Yeah,
Greg,
it's been horrific. You know, some of the FA Cup ties have been awful. One that really stands out was Leicester a few years ago away. We played a scratch
John Carver team.
It was absolutely awful, as bad as it gets.
And I was actually at the Oxford game that we lost.
Yeah, me too.
In 2017.
And it was a good. Yeah,
we lost away at Oxford, and we and Rafa played a weakened team, and we lost 3-0. So
terrible.
we've got to put that wrong to right.
Yeah, obviously put that right. Obviously, Ketch saying there. And remember, you can have your say tonight. What did you make of the cup exploits on the weekend and the league over that busy Christmas period? You tweet us at Love Sport Radio, call us 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp on the same number. Now that we have reached that halfway point, that midway point kind of, Ketch, two questions really. If we could go back in time 4 months, would you have said, actually, we're in a better position than I would have thought come January? And what can you kind of expect, or what's the realistic expectation for the rest of the second half of the season?
Yeah, maybe I think we're probably a little bit better off than what I would have predicted us to be. I thought we would be really ensconced in a relegation battle at this point. My buzzword, as you'll know, at the start of the season was inconsistent. Now my buzzword is unsustainable. It's just unsustainable.
New year, new word.
All our defenders are scoring and our strikers aren't scoring. Yeah. But this is everyone could see this coming. We sold Perez. I know that the release clause was met. We didn't sign Rondon permanently. That's 55% of your goals gone. And we've replaced that with Joe Linton, who scored one goal. It's completely unsustainable to have our defenders weighing in with so many goals and our front three just not contributing at all. So I think if you'd asked me that question before Christmas when we were in the top of the table, I would have been, you know, staggered that we were there. But now we're in a more realistic place, and now we've lost all the momentum, and I'm worried at the form of teams like Watford and Burnley getting wins now, and I just think we're going to get really wrapped up into it, and it's going to be a bit of a close finish.
Oh, I'm not so sure, Greg.
I was just, you know, halfway through the season, and our four strikers between them, if you call it four, have scored one goal.
Well, we've lost 55% of the goals with Perez and Rondon and Joe Linton. There's too much pressure on Joe Linton to make that difference up.
Well, obviously, they need to get that difference from somewhere. Obviously, Ketch saying 55% of the goals lost there. It is January transfer window. Can we see any incomings or any more outgoings possibly?
Well, we need a striker and we need a midfielder, and we're going to probably buy a winger. If this Ademola Lookman deal goes through, that's been the big rumour today.
Get another centre-half in.
And it just epitomises the makeup of the club. The recruitment team they're not in harmony with what we need on the pitch. So, case in point, Joe Linton is more of a striker, we're learning now, who likes to play as a wing forward with a big man. He was probably bought to be the big man. Emil Kraft is not a right wing back, he's a right back. We play with wing backs. So this recruitment is not really in keeping with what we need on the pitch. Ademola Lookman, I'm all for the signing. Anything in January as a Newcastle fan, I will snap your hand off for. And he's a young English player who I really like the look of when I saw him at Everton. I'll have him, but that's not what we need. So I think we need a midfielder and a striker. It looks like we're going to blow all our money on a winger.
Yeah, Greg, what do you make of it? Could we see any more?
Well, I think there's been links with Tosin at Everton as well, potentially as a loan. It's got a bit of the Slimani about it, hasn't it? You know, we brought him in from Leicester. Not confident. I think if you look back, you know, often the club does spend money when it thinks it's in real threat of relegation. I don't think it thinks it is yet. If you look at...
Well, they need to decide whether they think it is, because once February comes around, they can't...
Too late.
Yeah.
But if you look back, you know, November time, Bruce was saying we're not going to do any business in January. He actually said that we're not actively looking. He's changed his tune a little bit now. So, yeah, I can't say I have any confidence. You never know. Might be a last minute Chef Kikuchi or something silly like that.
Lovely.
Obviously not him, but...
Dumbia, remember that one?
Yeah,
There's been some stings,
but it could be some more deals in the works. As always, we'll be across from it, Love Sport, and obviously give you it first on the Newcastle Fan Show. But I did promise you, and I'm delighted to say, Lee Clark joins us next.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with two legends, Matt Ketchell, a.k.a. Ketch, from BBC Match of the Day magazine, and Greg Tomlinson from the Newcastle United Supporters Trust. And this is the first show of the year, and what a better way to kick it off. And I'm absolutely delighted to say we are joined now by former Newcastle legend Lee Clark. Lee, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time this evening. Obviously, it didn't go Newcastle's way on the weekend against Rochdale. They've got a plan again now in a replay, but what have you made of the season so far?
Bit up and down, really. I mean, difficult start, and then they've had a decent run midway through the first half of the season, but over the festive period it's been very difficult, with some tough results and some results that, in terms of the goals conceded, because the defence have been quite strong and steady, had conceded more goals than they expected to. And then obviously the injuries that have been picked up over the festive period as well.
Lee, it's Ketch here. Great to have you on the show. I'm not sure if you're aware, but today marks 23 years since Kevin Keegan quit the club. I just wondered what your memories of that day was, as someone who would have been around, and your reaction to that news when it came through all those years ago.
Not really a surprise, because the day before we'd played at the Valley against Charlton Athletic in the FA Cup, and Kevin wasn't his usual self as he got after the game. We drew the game to get a replay, and Kevin himself wasn't his usual bubbly self, and we knew something was up. So when we got into training, obviously today, 23 years ago, and got told the news that he'd quit the club, there was a shock. It was a big shock for everybody. He was the man that brought most players to the club that were there at the time, and us youngsters who were already there, he'd galvanised us and gave us a great team to be involved in. And so it was a real tough time and difficult for the club to overcome, certainly.
Can you remember how the news was broken to you? Because obviously there would have been no Sky Sports news or not a lot of mobile phones back then.
Well, obviously, as I said, I think we got in England travelling back from London the day before on the Sunday. Mm. And then as we got into training early on the Monday morning, we were told to congregate in the dining room, and Terry McDermott and Arthur Cox, Kevin's assistants, were passed the news on to us. And then obviously as it started breaking around the area and around the country, it was a bit of shocker.
Lee, Greg here. I was just wondering, obviously some great times before obviously Keegan left. What was your best moment in a black and white shirt in your first stint as a player?
Oh, so many. Every week it was. It was just a great time. I mean, I had obviously lots of friends and family who were fans, and you know, the excitement that they had building up to the games, because the entertainment that was put forward. Obviously, I mean, being Manchester United 5-0 at St James's Park stands out. A couple of results we had against Liverpool at home, and beaten 3-0 when Andy Cole scored. Just generally the it's hard to pick out games. I mean, the European adventures when we first got into those, and it's difficult to pick out one certain game, because we just followed the same path, game in, game out, home or away. You know, you look back at some of the games that we went down to Chelsea and Spurs and won, and you know, it was good. We didn't fear anyone, and we went and played with the same belief and mentality that we played home and away, and we just wanted to entertain the supporters.
Well, you certainly did that. It was amazing, wasn't it?
Absolutely, now, and it's actually coming a bit full circle now, Lee, because I work at Match of the Day magazine. We like to keep our tabs on young and up-and-coming players, and I know your lad, Bobby, is in the academy and doing quite well. Played for England. How's he finding it? What are his immediate goals? And I bet you would love to see him put on a first-team shirt one day.
Oh, listen, he's only 14 years of age. He's 15 next month. We're so proud as a family when he made his England debut at the end of last year. But, you know, he's at the bottom rung of a very high ladder. And it's getting harder for young players now because the top clubs and the elite academies don't just go for the best British players. They bring players from Europe and South America and Asia, etc. So it's difficult. I mean, he's doing well. He's had a great couple of years, but, you know, it's all in the head of him. If he's just got to keep listening to his coaches at the academy at Newcastle and take on board. And if he wants any advice from me as his father, that's not a problem. You know, hopefully one day he can make it. It's a fantastic, well, you don't call it a job because it's something you love. It's a hobby when you end up getting paid for it. So if he was to make it as a professional footballer, I would be delighted for him. So, but it, you know, he's, as I said, he's at the bottom rung of a very high ladder, but he's done some great things so far that us as a family, me and his mum and his brother and sister, are very proud of. So hopefully he can keep going.
What type of player is he? Tough tackling midfielder?
He's a tall lad. He's athletic. He can make and score goals at the level he's playing at. But as I said, it's all ahead of him. And you know, there has been quite a few rumours and stories about him at such a young age. But he's took that in his stride, and he loves the game. He's out there training tonight. That's where he is tonight, at the academy, and training with the group in preparation for a game at the weekend against Manchester City. So he loves the game and he's enjoying it, and that long may that continue.
And just turning things to this month, obviously it's the transfer window. We've been heavily linked with Adamola Lookman today. Personally, I think we need a striker and a midfielder. Who would you like to see us sign as a Newcastle fan?
I agree with you that, whether we'll give Joe Linton more time or not, it's plain to see that things aren't happening there at the moment. And, you know, the team, you need to score goals, state the obvious, to win games, and we can't rely on the defenders to keep cropping up and coming up with goals. So, you know, there has to be something trying to be done in January. It's an awful month. I've obviously dealt with it when I've been a manager myself. It's an unbelievably tough month to bring the players in, and especially strikers. I mean, which clubs really want to give their strikers away if they're good enough? Because they don't really want to give them away. They'll give strikers away if they're not very good at their job. And Newcastle don't need that. They need someone to come in and because they do create chances. You know, they did against Rochdale. They end up having to have a replay because they didn't put the chances away when they were on top in the first half. And as I said, Joe Linton's a young striker, but you know, ultimately you're judged when you wear the number 9 for Newcastle. You're judged on the amount of goals you score, and certainly when a team's down there, when Newcastle are on a little bit of a indifferent run at the moment, we do need someone who's going to come in and score goals. So I would say the priority is a striker. I can see why they want a Lookman. He's a young player. He fits the ethos in terms of the players, these quick, wide players that the club want, exciting players. But I would say a priority is a striker who can, from January to the end of the season, you know, get his fair share of goals that'll make sure the club aren't involved in a relegation battle again.
Yeah, Lee, you mentioned that in different form, and Ketch was talking about, obviously, worried that momentum has gone and inconsistency has obviously been following Newcastle this season. What are you making towards the second half of the season then? Are you worried that there are slides incoming, or they can sort of keep their head above water?
Well, I'm confident that they can stay in the league, but what worries us at this level of football is when you get in a bad run, it's difficult to get out of it. When you have players the same as individuals, you know, who are in a bad run, it's difficult for them to come out of it. And you need a bit of freshness trying sometimes. And certainly the injury situation hasn't helped. You know, the club, and Steve was always on record to say he felt strong in the central defensive situation. He had six senior centre-halves. when he was playing three at the back, so that was fine. But at one stage over the Christmas period, he was having to put square pegs and round holes at the back because he only had one fit centre-half. So obviously Andy Carroll's situation, when Andy's firing in on all cylinders and he's fit and he's getting a rhythm, he can be unplayable. But he's had a stop-start time at the club. He had a stop-start few years because of injuries. So they've played a big part in it. But, you know, it doesn't get any easier. The next game, Wolves away there, a terrific side. Wolves, a club that's growing quickly, a group of players that are growing quickly with looking from the outside, an excellent manager. But they just need to get a positive result in the league to get some confidence back and build momentum again, like they did that a little spell where they went on a run of results and it lifted everybody. But over the festive period, that's gone back, and it's like you said, it's that inconsistency that's becoming a bit of an issue.
Yeah, you talked about the difficulties at this level sometimes when you get into some bad form, but also about the stop-start nature when you're a player. What do you think about what do you make of Sean Longstaff and how he's doing? And as someone who's also come through in that central midfield role, obviously great to see him emerging through last season. Just wondering what your views were on him, and I guess his brother as well.
Well, listen, I know the family very well. I grew up with a father who's a very, very good ice hockey player, and he's from this area. I used to go and watch him play my Whitley Warriors. But I know Sean very well. I gave him his debut up in Scotland when I was Kilmarnock manager. I took him up on loan with Freddie Woodman and Callum Roberts, the three of them from Newcastle in January window. So I know him well, and he came on the scene and didn't surprise me at all in how he done and how he took to the first team football and how accomplished he looked and settled and had great authority and you know, so and confidence. And what's happened this season is quite normal with young players. You know, they get in, they have a spurt, and they have a little bit of a dip, and things happen. He had the red card that stopped his season a little bit. He picked up an injury. It's been a bit stop start, and you know, he hasn't had the consistency this season that he had last season. He's obviously having the speculation that continually that Manchester United are wanting to take him to Old Trafford, so he has to deal with that at such a young age. But he's going to be a top player in the future as well. So, and his brother, who's a completely different type of midfield player to Sean, it was always earmarked and was always known that young Matty had the attributes to be a good player. And it's a great story for the family, a terrific family that the two of them have lined up together. And I can see them, you know, having very successful careers, and hopefully the both of them have long successful careers at Newcastle.
And scoring goals against Man United is a good habit.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, to score your first two senior goals, Man United the winner at home, and then you know, to open the score at Old Trafford, and then we took both goals as well. It shows you that the both of them, they have the confidence and the belief to handle the big occasion.
Yeah, absolutely. Doesn't get much better than that, Lee. We really appreciate you coming on tonight and giving us a little bit of your time. We wish you all the best, and your boy in the academy, Lee Clark there, former Newcastle legend. Obviously, so good to hear what he had to say and get his insight on the team. And obviously, his story is obviously Keegan leaving, quitting 23 years to the day. We told you it'd be a kick-off show to kick off the new year at Newcastle, and it was Lee Clark there. And now we get to speak to James Fielden, who is a commentator and Wolves fan, to preview that weekend's game.
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with Matt Ketchell, aka Ketch from BBC Match of the Day magazine, and Greg Tomlinson from the Newcastle United Supporters Trust. What a show we are having so far. Obviously talking about the busy Christmas period, all the games that took place for the Magpies and that FA Cup, and then we just spoke to legend Lee Clark. Really good to get his insight on how his son's doing, the team are doing this year. And before we look at that game on the weekend against Wolves, a bit of breaking news into the Love Sports studio, because Harry and Meghan have quit as senior royals and will now live between the UK and US and will work to become financially independent. More from this breaking news story as we have it. Harry and Meghan there quitting as senior royals, but we are keeping it on the Toon Army, and it is their game on the weekend, and it is Wolves. It is a tricky one. They're in a little bit of indifferent form themselves, but they've had some great results, obviously getting the double over City. And a man to tell us more about that game is James Fielden? And if you want to ask a question to James or to Greg or to Ketch, just tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 7020 558. James, thank you so much for joining us now and giving us a little bit of your time. Wolves are having a brilliant season. Obviously, take away the last few games, a little bit like Newcastle, although Wolves' season started all the way back in July. I think you've played maybe around 40 games already. This is a tough fixture on the weekend. What are you making of it?
Yeah, evening, guys. Yeah, it undoubtedly will be, because I think if you look at any of Wolves' performance at the moment, tiredness is catching up with them at one point or another. Nuno's tried his best to rotate the team around in all the games over Christmas. You know, I think maybe barring Cody, the centre of the defence, I think everyone has been, pretty much everyone has been a sub at some point. You know, he's tried to give everyone a fair amount of minutes and a fair share, not to to overstretch it, because Wolves do have a very small squad anyway. But yeah, I mean, Wolves fans certainly looking at it as a winnable game, I'm afraid to say. You know, they do have some outstanding players in that team. Obviously, everyone's talking about Adama Traore at the moment, but they do have strengths all over the pitch. And yeah, I mean, certainly as a home game as well, Wolves are hoping that they can get the points.
Hi, James. It's Ketchy. I agree with you. It's a winnable game on the weekend. But I think as Newcastle fans, we quite look on at Wolves in envy, at a club who have a plan and who are investing in their squad and buying young, exciting players. It's obviously been a fantastic transformation over the last 2 or 3 years. What's next for Wolves? What do they need to do? Do they need to build a bigger squad, push for Champions League? Do you know what's next in the plans for the future?
Well, obviously this season for them is all about the Europa League. I mean, as it's panned out, it's been a bit of a strange season, because I think everyone thought last year, well, look, they've got promoted, they finished seventh, you're not going to top that, let's go into the Europa League and go all out for it. But as it's happened, you know, Manchester United have been abysmal largely, Arsenal are obviously being transformed at the moment under Mikel Arteta. And so actually there's kind of gaps opened up above seventh place. So now they're kind of looking at it thinking, well, actually, we could probably push on here. Obviously, the way that the League Cup went last night is a bonus, because it looks like there'll be another Europa League spot available in the league, especially if Villa are beaten by Leicester over the two legs as well. So there's going to be European places up for grabs again to potentially re-qualify for whether it be the Europa League or Champions League next season. But they like to keep a small squad. I think when I spoke to you guys last time, I mentioned it, but the way they do it is that they like to have a squad of maybe 16, 17, 18 senior pros, and then the rest of it is made up by under-23s that they think can come in and do a job, or, you know, just fill a spot on the bench if they need to, because they want everyone involved. They don't want anyone feeling on the outside. They want to, you know, have a really good unity in the squad. You know, the one thing about this Wolves squad that I don't think you could say probably about any other Premier League squad is that there are no bad apples in it whatsoever. There are no egos. You know, you've got some amazingly decorated players in the squad, but no one who would go and do something stupid on social media, or, you know, just get caught out by the press or the media or anything like that. And so you don't get anything off the pitch whichever detracts from what they're doing on it. And I think, you know, the bunch of clubs, yourselves, Newcastle, West Ham, Everton, should be exactly what Wolves are. And, you know, the planning and the way that Wolves have done it in the first season in the Premier League and then coming into this as well, they've shown that medium-sized clubs, relatively speaking, can achieve something. I think that's fair to say. And yeah, they've done it in a short space of time. Whether they can continue it, we're not really sure, because I think so much of it depends on whether Nuno stays at the club. There were quite a few squeaky bums when the Arsenal job was up for grabs, because plenty thought that he might get a look in there. As it happened, he didn't. But as long as they can keep Nuno and keep acquiring these good young players, then I think people just want them to try and take it to the next level, and ultimately the end goal will be to try and qualify for the Champions League. But realistically speaking, I think that'll be dependent on as much as how badly the teams above them do, as well as Wolves do themselves, if that makes sense.
I think one similarity Newcastle squad has with Wolves is there is a bit of spirit there amongst the players, and there's not really bad apples in the Newcastle team. I think the only difference is we lack a bit of quality where Wolves have that bit of quality. Are you worried about anyone leaving this window? Obviously, there's a lot of noise around Neves and Traore. What's the
I don't think there's anything in that at all, to be honest. To be honest, as good as Neves has been, he's certainly not a player that would get into Juventus' team, or even, well, I don't know, maybe you would say get in Man United's team, but Neves hasn't been on top of his game all season, I would probably say, for the last part of it anyway, and he'd probably admit that as well by his own high standards. Traore is not going to be sold. They've categorically said that. I know effectively every player is up for sale if someone comes in with an astronomical bid, but I don't really see it. And Raul Jimenez wouldn't be sold. Well, there'd be absolute uproar in Wolverhampton. The buildings would be torn down if Jimenez was sold from Wolves, so I can't see that happening. The one player who is likely to leave is Patrick Cotrone, because Jimenez has done so well up front. He was brought in from AC Milan in the summer for $18 million. But has barely had a kick. I think he started just two Premier League games all season, and even when there has been a game where Jimenez hasn't been totally fit or they've needed to rotate for whatever reason, he hasn't started in those either. So it's looking like he's going to go back to Fiorentina on a loan, possibly, or permanent deal, depending on what deal they manage to sort out. But yeah, he seems to be the one who, if anyone's going to leave, would be that guy. A couple of kids on loan, but no one of any significance apart from Cotrone.
Just hi there, it's Greg here. How good is Adama Traore? Obviously, we've seen him over the years with his unbelievable speed. He obviously came through in Spain and then his time at Middlesbrough, etc. Just how good is he? You know, we were close to signing him, or Rafa wanted him, and he wasn't afforded the support to bring him in. How good is he when you see him week in, week out?
He just frightens people. I mean, there's that picture that's been doing the rounds on social media over the last couple of weeks of him flexing his guns to the camera. I mean, he is absolutely massive. Like,
for he didn't even make sense how.
Yeah, well, yeah. If you believe that, he claims it's natural genes, but I've never known anyone who's kind of come up with that kind of shape just the way they've been born. But I mean, he frightens people. I mean, even when I was in half decent shape playing football, like, you just, as a fullback, you don't want people with pace running at you. The thing that still frustrates a few fans is that he sometimes takes that extra touch when he should play someone in, or, you know, take that shot a little bit earlier rather than wait for players to get back around him. But there's still that kind of speed of thought, which isn't quite there. But what he does have is something that terrifies teams. He wasn't very good against Manchester United in the Cup at the weekend. You know, everyone's allowed an off game, but his numbers are starting to turn. You know, he's getting more assists, he's getting more goals. You saw the goal he scored against Spurs and the one against Manchester City that started the comeback the other night as well. So, you know, you've got, I know he's out injured now, I think, so Maximan, but someone who's just got lightning pace, who just gets fans off their seats, and you just know that if he picks up the ball, something can happen. And what ends up happening from a Wolves point of view, which Nuno loves, is that, you know, he attracts so many players around him that then, if they can leave someone free on the other wing, for example, which on Sunday might be Diogo Jota, then suddenly you've got massive of space for other players as well. So he gets you up the pitch, he can run at people, opens up gaps for others. And has a good relationship with Matt Doherty, who's the wing-back playing behind him. So, yeah, he's improved no end, and you can't really put anything other than Nuno's presence and Nuno's coaching beyond to that, really, because he's been excellent. But I think Tony Pulis has been keen to take some of the credit as well from an interview I heard with him the other day. So, I mean, he's one of those players, isn't he, that, you know, everyone can see what he's got, and I think every coach backs themselves to polish a rough diamond, and slowly but surely he's turning the corner with Wolves.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll be one of the key players on the weekend, James. But for you, where will this game be won and lost, and what is your score prediction?
Probably on Traore. If Traore has a good game, then Wolves are probably likely to have a good game. You can bet your bottom dollar that it'll be 0-0 at half-time. Wolves rarely score first. I would say, if they win a game, it's normally by the odd goal. So I think 2-1 is probably a fair reflection. If Jimenez and Traore are playing well, then Wolves have got a very good chance, I'd say.
Yeah, 2-1 Newcastle. Yeah, James?
2-1 Wolves, it'll finish.
2-1 Wolves. James, really good to get you on as always. A pleasure having you on the show. James Fielding there, commentator on Wolves fans, saying that Wolves, they won't score early, but they'll get the job done. 2-1 Ketch, what are you saying?
Oh, well, predicting Newcastle is extremely difficult this season. Not in most seasons, it's very difficult, but there's nothing filling me with confidence about this game. We're, like I say, we've got injuries, we've lost momentum. Although, having said that, we have a few players back from injury. I believe Carroll's in the picture, Shelvey, maybe Saint-Maximin. I think Shelvey and Saint-Maximin are key when they play or win. Percentage goes up quite dramatically.
Even that, we were talking about inconsistency from Shelvey. Now Key coming back, he's been better of late, hasn't he?
Yeah, definitely, and scored a few goals. Being John Joe Shelvey, that's who he should be. He has the ability to do that, and he's just bringing a bit of consistency to his game and being the leader. I think we need, if him and Saint-Maximin can be involved, maybe I like our chances. But Wolves are a very organised, talented, young, hungry team who are going places, and it's a difficult place to go. Molineux, just ask Man City what happened to them on the 27th of December. So it's going to be tough. I'd take a draw, but I think we'll lose.
Okay, Greg, what do you say?
I'm going to go for a win. Just the way the team we've played this season with the luck, I just have a feeling that it's going to be another lucky day, another Sheffield United away or something like that. Or in a, you know, they're in a similar position to Wolves in the table. They've had a very similar season in terms of doing really well. If we've got four or five back, I think we might get absolutely battered, but somehow win 1-0.
The only thing with Wolves is they've got a lot of games now, haven't they? They've got a replay as well in the FA Cup. They've got Europa League commitments. They've got a small squad. Maybe they'll take their eye off the ball for this game and focus on the bigger picture.
Yeah, maybe. Good point, Kitch. They don't like to rotate much. Nuno obviously likes to stick with a team that he thinks can win the games and what he does best. So obviously maybe Newcastle could get that momentum back. Obviously a key word of the show so far. And I'm delighted to say we're going to be speaking to another guest next. And this time Mark Douglas will be joining us.
Giving your team the coverage they deserve. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Newcastle United Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with Greg Tomlinson from the Newcastle United Supporters Trust and Matt Ketchell, aka Ketch, from BBC Match of the Day magazine. What a packed show we have had this evening, speaking to Lee Clark, speaking to James Fielden, and now the icing on the cake, Mark Douglas has joined us, football publishing editor for Chronicle Live. Mark, really appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time this evening, because I know you're a busy man and you've managed to join us. What are you making of the season so far, Mark?
It's been a mixed bag, hasn't it? Let's be honest. It's very strange because the team are probably in a better position than I thought they'd be in the summer. But the performances have been very mixed. But then there's also been some really special moments in another season. You'd say moments like Almiron's goal, Matthew Longstaff's winner against Manchester United. These would have been the away win at West Ham, Shelvey's equaliser against Man City. They would have been sort of classic Newcastle moments that people would have talked about. But I think because of what happened in the summer, and I think also because of the uncertainty, I think still, and maybe a little bit of lack of faith in the club and even the manager as well, even though he's done okay, it's there's a little bit of an asterisk next to it, isn't there? And I think we're probably looking at the next few weeks of sort of saying, a lot of people have been warning that there's a downturn in form to come, and I think if it happens, it'll happen in the next few weeks. I mean, I hope that it doesn't, and I hope they can go on. And the FA Cup looks inviting, so that you'd have your fingers crossed that if they can get on in that and pick up a couple of results in the next few tough weeks, then you'd say, look, it's not been a bad season. But there always seems to be that asterisk next to it because of everything that's gone on before.
Mark, it's Ketch here. Great to have you on the show. Finally, injuries has become a bit of a talking point over Christmas, and I really enjoyed the book you wrote on Rafa Benitez's time at Newcastle, The Rafalution. And I seem to remember in the book you spoke about a system Rafa had developed during his managerial career to deal with injuries. I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about that and maybe contrast that to the method Steve Bruce has, because obviously injuries seem to be creeping back up when Rafa seemed to have them under control.
Yeah, I think, Rafa was, I think when you spoke to him, he had a real interest in medicine. He was he was a school teacher before he became before he sort of got into football. And I think he had that kind of lust to learn about everything. And there's no doubt that he took a huge interest in, he was one of these kind of guys who would know, he taught the goalkeeper coach through goalkeeper positioning, even though he never played it himself. And I think he was like that with the medicine department. He brought in some Spanish physiotherapists, I think, who were still there, to be fair, who were part of this beefed up medical team. And the idea was that they had so much data that was fed to the coaching staff through the medical team. They would take markers and things like blood. They would also Rafa would have the individual data, the GPS data on the players, and they would effectively work out when players were in the red zone through a whole variant of statistics. So some of them would be kind of, as I said, blood markers, things like that, but also there would be kind of the manager's observations as well. But they worked really, really closely with the doctor, Dr. Paul Katzen, who's there, who's still there now. And they would have a sort of morning, I think it was 7 o'clock in the morning, I was told, basically this morning kind of forum where they talk about all the players and decide who was doing, you know, who would do it, you know, less of the session, who would do more of the session. And it really was, you know, it really was an extremely kind of efficient system. It was a streamlined system. You know, Rafa, as he was in everything, really, he was the kind of man at the top of it, but he had his coaches who would deal with the kind of the training load, I think it was. And if you remember Paco, who was, I think, took over for a couple of games while Rafa was kind of recovering from illness. He was, you know, like absolutely forensic when it came to training loads. So he would look through what they'd done in previous jobs, and he would basically map that onto what Newcastle were doing. So when they had, I mean, it particularly came to a fore when they had all those games in the Championship, and they would basically use the same system that they used to have Liverpool through four competitions, so Europe and the two domestic cup competitions and the league. They would do the same thing for Newcastle and the Championship. It just saw they didn't have injuries. You know, they had injuries, obviously they did, but they were kind of tended to be contact injuries. They didn't take too many chances with players. Now, a lot of the same process is still there this season. So I think it's quite interesting, because the only difference is the man at the top. So he's got all the data. He's got the same sort of systems pretty much in place, because the same head of sports science is there, Jamie Harley, who, you know, I spoke to last year, and he was, you know, and he's kind of at the forefront of everything. They're still working with Orico, who are, you know, they do a lot of stuff with elite sports, NBA and NASA athletes, about how, you know, basically injury prevention and also, you know, fatigue and things like that as well. So the only difference is Steve Bruce at the top. Now, knowing Steve Bruce from his days at Sunderland, I think Bruce is a more kind of intuitive coach. So he will sometimes, he'll probably have all the data in front of him a little bit more than Benitez. But what I think sometimes he does is he'll talk to the players. He's a bit more of a player's manager, so he might take soundings from the players on how they're feeling. But I think probably what's happened this season, sometimes that works, but I think on a couple of occasions this season, I think in particular with Alan St. Maximum, where he himself has said,
yeah,
look, I shouldn't have done that. And then with Andy Carroll over Christmas as well, where he's also said that. I think he's taken the players' word, and the players ended up getting injured. So that's maybe the slight difference. Now, I mean, I did some, I spoke to Ben Dinnery at PremierLeagueInjuries.com a couple of weeks ago, because I was, you know, it feels like they've had more injuries this season. But he kind of came up with some stats and said it's sort of the same at this stage of the season as it was last season. In fact, they're slightly better for soft tissue injuries. But what will be really interesting is how it is from now to the end of the season, because Rafa's whole thing was about peaking at the right time, which was kind of second of the season. You know, you always saw that with their Premier League, in their Premier League campaign. So it'd be really interesting to see how it happens there. But it does feel as if things have changed a little bit, even if a lot of the processes are still the same.
Yeah, Mark, we really appreciate you coming on. We'll have to get you on another time on the show, because I feel like there's so much more we can speak about with you. But we really appreciate you coming on. We know you're busy. Mark Douglas there, football publishing editor for Chronicle Live. Now, we have had a WhatsApp into the studio, this time from Cal Halbert, the legend that is. He said, yes, it is difficult to get out of a bad run. However, Newcastle always have a terrible time over Christmas. The biggest issue, in my opinion, is they're playing on the 18-yard box line, and our defensive play needs to be played 20 yards further up the pitch. What do you make of that?
Yeah, so as you're referring to, we're playing it out of the back and sitting a bit too deep. Yeah, potentially. I think often when you're in a relegation battle, the best thing is just to keep it simple. And certainly when we've needed to get goals, the system has been very Steve Bruce in the let's lump it up to Andy Carroll and get bodies next to him. So when we've had our backs against the wall, that's the system that's been employed. So I don't see Steve Bruce as a manager who encourages play out the back.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. I want to see us higher up the pitch. I think if the defence gets higher up the pitch, that pushes the midfield on, and then that gets the front three on, and we need to see them further forward. We're in a counter-attacking team at the minute. So that's where it is.
Absolutely. And a bit of housekeeping, because there's a special event, Ketch, that I know you want to quickly address.
Yes. So a friend of mine is putting an evening with Andy Cole on, and this is in West London next week on Thursday, the 16th of January.
It's up Marty Shepherd's Bush.
Yes, at Bush Hall, 7 p.m. All proceeds go to the Jason Roberts Foundation. So Andy Cole's going to be there doing a Q&A with the audience. There's going to be a raffle. He'll be signing and doing photos. And I'm told Les Ferdinand is going to go as well, potentially. So Sir Les and Andy Cole in the same building. So if you're in London or if you fancy travelling and contributing to a great cause, then get yourself along to Bush Hall on Thursday the 16th of January.
There you go. Obviously a nice little plug there, but get yourself along. Some Newcastle players will be there, ex-players. What a fan show we've had this evening. Speaking to Lee Cock, speaking to James Fielden and Mark Douglas there. As always, you've played a part on the Newcastle fan show, but the true stars of the show, as they always are, Greg Tomlinson and Matt Ketchell. We will see you at the same time next Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
This is Love Sport.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.